5, episode 29. Chef Brian Sal's on the show tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to chatting with you guys. Do me a favor, if you got 2 seconds, throw a little like there on them podcast if you listen to this after that, or subscribe if you don't already, because the show comes to you free once a week, sometimes, or maybe soon, even more than that. So thank you guys for all the support. We really, really appreciate it. Let's play a little dramatic music and get this thing started.
There's a price to pay. Time for you to get down on your knees. I pray you can say goodbye to the good old days. They're never coming back. Watch your future fade. I came to play to get my dues paid. I guess you had a dream, but it can't be saved.
Turn the mic on. Yeah. What's happening, everybody? What's happening? What's happening? Welcome. It's Love Foods Live right here. Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn FM, and now iHeartRadio as well, because I do heart radio very, very much. I love to heart my radio as much as humanly possible whenever the world will allow me to do that. Welcome to Love Foods Live. It's your boy, Chef Plum. Thank you guys for joining us here on a Monday night. It's going to be a great one, man. Chef Brian Sal's on the show tonight, man. A really, really awesome dude, a great guitar player, and I'll tell you what, this guy is a lot of fun, man. His story is pretty cool from what I've done the research on. You know, I met him at the Hot Sauce Judging this year, and the dude, we just kind of, you can tell somebody's cool when you talk to him just for a couple of minutes, and I was talking to Chef. I was like, you know what, this dude's awesome. We got to talk to him on the show. The story seems to be really, really good. So it's going to be a great show tonight talking to him, because, you know, it's like he's a big music guy, too, and plays guitar. Not only does he play guitar, he shreds guitar all over the place. And the dude's in the kitchen calling tickets, playing guitar. It's dope. It's crazy. All right, I made the last part up, but that could be possible. You never know. Going to be a great show, guys, so I appreciate you taking the time to check it out tonight. How are you? How was your weekend? Hope it was good. I worked 15 days straight, so I could take the time to go to a wedding this weekend, which was an amazing, amazing time. But it brings up a... As I was there, it was up in the Adirondack Mountains. We were about 30 miles or so from the Canadian border, near Lake Placid, actually. And honestly, it was cool because it made me think of a lot of different things, man. It made my brain kind of, I don't know, start going back and forth. Like, what do I prefer? Because I loved it up there. It was beautiful up there. I was really into it. But honestly, I wasn't sure, like... You know, I've been a chef in hotels and you know, at the beach and things like that, but do I prefer the beach or do I prefer being someplace like up north like that? Because honestly, it's a tough toss-up for me, because it's beautiful, it's gorgeous. They're all gorgeous. They all look great, they all look gorgeous, and they all have pros and cons. Honestly, all I could think about when I was up there was, man, I wouldn't mind being up here running a resort, man. It's definitely got a season. They have a couple of seasons. They have, like, their ski season. Then it slows down, and they have what's called mud season, I guess, when everything starts to melt. But then they get into their actual real season, too, in the summertime for, like, vacation time for people coming from the cities and whatnot. But when we were up there, it was the beginning of their mud season, and it was crazy, man, because there was still snow on the ground and giant waterfalls everywhere. And, again, I was like, man, how cool would it be to work up here? Because... so many great farms, so many great local produce and local meats and just so many local things being made there. You guys know how weird I would get about that stuff. And it was just really cool. And the people were really nice. I mean, I don't mean to sound surprised when I say that, but I was a little surprised just to how friendly they were. You know, you can come down from the city or whatnot, but I don't know what my preference would be. What do you guys think? Let me know on Instagrams what you think, or send me those DMs and let me know. Because honestly... I'll put a poll up also later on. I'll put a poll up on Instagram stories. But I'm curious to know, would you prefer to work at a beach resort type place or a beach town? Not necessarily a resort, I guess. It could be a restaurant or something like that in a beach town. or up in the mountains at like a ski resort type area or some kind of destination like that, because I was really torn. I wasn't sure. And I asked myself like five times, like, well, this view is gorgeous, unbelievable, and the amount of food you could get. But then again, you know, it's still snow on the ground. It's still, you know, not really much ocean. There's not really like a lot of seafood you're going to get there unless you want to eat pike, which is a great fish, but I don't want to eat, you know, I wouldn't be like making pike sushi or pike ceviche. I guess maybe you could, but wow. It was interesting, man, because it struck me as one of those things that there's people who, you know, I guess as someone who lives and works in the New York City area on the East Coast, I never really thought about or put a lot of thought into being someplace so remote, and thinking about how that would go. And honestly, I'd be cool with it. I think I could do it. I think I would do it, but I think I'm a beach guy. I think I prefer the ocean. I prefer the beach. And that would probably be my choice. But I wouldn't be upset if I got, you know, in a situation where I had to be at a place like that, because it was still really pretty. I mean, it was dope. It's sleepy. People go to bed really early. But everybody's up really early too, which I find also, you know, I work in Montauk in the summertime, and people tend to get up very, very early. But, you know, everything's kind of bustling pretty early in the morning. But it makes sense because, you know, you want to get up and enjoy the day, which, you know, I found myself doing as well. So, yeah, let me know what you think, man. I'm curious. Like I said, I'm going to put up a post about that on the Instagram stories on @chef_plum on them Instagrams. And we'll see. Just kind of I'll figure out how they want me to word it. They don't really say this one or this one, but maybe we'll say, would you work at this place or this place, and see what happens, or click yes for this one, no for this one. Maybe we'll do something like that. I'm curious to know how people feel about it. So, yeah, well, awesome. Hey, also, too, I want to let everybody know, we're going to be doing a giveaway starting this week on our Instagram page. I'm going to be giving away a brand new knife from my good friends over at Ergo Chef, local knives, amazing knives I use every single day. I try to give one away every now and then. We're going to give one away this week. So, stay tuned for that. We're going to figure out a cool story with that and make something fun out of it. Those guys make great knives. We'll do the same knife I use every day, the Ergo Chef Pro Series Santuco. That's the knife I use every single day. I want you guys to try it, man. I think if you try it, you'll love it. So we'll do a giveaway with that this week, too. That'll be on the Instagram page as well. Something else we have to just talk about really quick, because I got a little feedback. Great show last week. Big shout-out to Cupcake Casey, the one and only Casey Schiller in St. Louis for being on the show last week and the Chef Educator of the Year. How about that? That was pretty dope. But we talked a lot about, I told the story about having, you know, chefs, kid people who do shows and call themselves chefs. And, you know, I got a little feedback, most of it all completely you guys agreeing with me, but one or two people chiming in and being like, well, you know, I mean, the kid did work really hard for it. And listen, all I want to say is this, guys, and I mean it, and I'm not being a dick, but like, that happened to me the week I was judging the Pro Start Nationals, where I'm watching high school kids who worked their asses off to get there, and then this kid was on a show and then wants to come and be interviewed and be called a celebrity chef. Go fuck yourself. That's not going to change in my brain, ever, ever. And I don't think, I can't speak for every single chef in the world, but I will say, I'll speak for a lot of chefs that I know personally, and that is just disrespectful. And I will never, ever do that. And will I never, ever even acknowledge a guy like that. Now, if this kid has gone out and, you know, quit school and ran away from home and been working at hotels since he was 10 years old and working his way up and just trying, which isn't even legal, but whatever, because we do so many legal things in restaurants, but working his way up and done something, yeah, maybe I'd talk. Even if he had a couple years experience working in a hotel, I would probably be a little bit less adamant about this. But if you haven't done it, then please don't come in here and tell me to call you something that you 100% are not. I used the analogy last week. I've seen every episode of ER. I watched the first two seasons of Grey's Anatomy. After that, it kind of felt shitty, but I did watch the first two seasons. I don't call myself doctor, but I feel confident I could do an amputation if I had to. I do. I mean, I've cut up enough animals in my lifetime. I feel very confident that I can make that happen. So if it offends you guys, I'm sorry. It's just how I feel about it, and I'm sorry. But I'm not sorry for my opinion. I'm sorry that it offends you. Clearly, I think there's a lot to learn there. So, you know, honestly, this shit happened after I was judging Pro Star. Get the fuck out of here. You think I'm going to be nice? No. Stop it. I've been doing this shit for too damn long. Don't disrespect us like that. God damn it. If you didn't, it would be – if you would just change how it was worded, then it would be fine. But that's how you worded it, and that's how you were adamant about being the gentleman being called. So, no. Not going to happen. Not on my, not here. Not at the show. Sorry. Anyway, I'm done talking about it, man. I got a great show tonight, man. I'm looking forward to talking to our guest, Chef Brian Sal from Beauty in Essex in New York City. He also has a brand new project on YouTube. He's done a lot of content on YouTube, but he's got a new one called Chop and Shred. We're going to talk about that. We'll talk about the business, talk about history. You know what we do. So if you got 2 seconds, I'm going to play a tune. I'll give you enough time to go in the fridge and pop a top on a cold one. Sit down here and enjoy this conversation. It's going to be a lot of fun, man. It should be a pretty educational one. You got Brian's a very talented chef, and he's been around the block a little bit. So dude even traveled fucking playing in a metal band. Stop it. That's crazy talk, right? Unbelievable. Check it. Well, I shouldn't say metal, a thrashcore band, but, you know, that's he traveled it, and that's awesome. So I saw a lot of stuff. Anyway, again, guys, if you have 2 seconds, throw a like there on the page there. Like and subscribe. We really appreciate that. Does a lot for the algorithm. Still working on what that means. But we'll be right back with Chef Brian Sal right here on Plum Up Food Blast. Stay right there. Here's Rise Against Injection. Be right back. I think we all need a little more Rise Against in our lives every day. What a great fucking tune, dude. That's the day I've had today. I was rocking Rise Against really loud in the car driving home from the city today. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to play it tonight, too. I think it's kind of appropriate for our guest this evening, Chef Brian Sal from Beauty in Essex in the big city of New York. You know, so I met Brian briefly. First of all, I've heard nothing but amazing stories about this guy. You know, he works with Derek Prince and our buddy Chef Timo and just... You know, both really amazing guys, good brothers, love those guys very much. And I think Brian falls right in that category too, man. You meet somebody and you talk to him for a few seconds and, you know, in general, you can tell right off the bat that, yeah, you're going to like the guy and we'll end up being friends. And that's how I felt when I met Brian, talking to him, because I know the guys, he's awesome. And in the little bit we've talked before the show, man, we very similar backgrounds. I mean, I didn't travel in a thrashcore band, but having kids and doing all that stuff and understanding how that shit goes, man, it's a different world, a different level, a different type of cook, a different type of chef that it takes to do that. So it's very excited to have the opportunity this evening to talk to the one and only Chef Brian Sal. Chef, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good, brother. Thanks for having me, and thanks for all those kind words. But I also have to say thank you for playing some Rise Against before I came
Fuck
on.
Yeah.
Because that was amazing. That was amazing.
Dude, you got,
thank you.
You got to have a good intro song.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it.
Now, would we call Rise Against, would that fall in the thrashcore category or no?
That would fall in the, like, melodic hardcore. Definitely.
Yeah.
It's definitely hardcore, but it's, you know, obviously it's very melodic with the singing style. But, I mean, it's all rock and roll. It's all metal. It's all distorted guitars, drums, and bass. That's what I want. That's what I'm craving for. So it's good for me.
Dude, you're so right. And I said so many times in this program how much music and food in the kitchen go together. And it's almost like very similar to what you just talked about, that even like the old hardcore scene from when we were younger. It's just a, you know, I call people in our generation of cooks, you know, the broken band of misfit toys, the lost boys, so to speak. Like, we're here, you know, it doesn't matter if you're black, white, red, purple, nobody cares. Like, we're here together to make this happen. And that's what we are. And it's awesome. And I love it. And I think it kind of falls in the same. That's why music and food kind of go together so well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's an unbelievable amount of parallels between music and food, whether it's the creativity part of it, whether it's the business part of it. You know, how these two businesses stay afloat is kind of gravity defying, because, you know, you look at the restaurant business and the amount of restaurants that go out of business. And then you look at the amount of restaurants, how successful a restaurant can be and how much that's mirrored by the music industry.
Right.
The only difference is I feel like the music industry has had rock stars for a much longer time, whereas I know you hate this term, but that whole celebrity chef phenomenon is fairly new for our generation.
Well, here's the thing that drives me nuts. You graduate culinary school, and as opposed to, you know, when I went to school, I wanted to go to school because I wanted to learn how to cook and learn the right way to cook and understand. I had experience before I went, but I wasn't doing it the right way. I went to learn the right way and start a career. These kids, some kids now go to culinary school because they want to be a celebrity chef on Food Network, which, you know, come on.
And, you know, it's I mean, one thing about people like that is usually they get weeded out of the business fairly quickly, or they kind of realize that they're not going to cut it. Some of them, hey, they manage to squeeze by and wiggle by and stay slimy and make it through. But I think for the most part, that first generation of celebrity chefs, most of them are legit. I mean, most of them had paid their dues. You know, by far, I don't think anyone would argue that. But what that has created is this whole generation of wannabes, you know, a whole generation of people who are not willing to put in the work, the blood, the sweat, the tears to get to that level. You know, I always say, people see the success, they never see the journey to that success. So you don't realize what it took to get there.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And a wise man once said, you'll never know where you're going if you don't know where you came from. And you know, for me, that's what culinary school is about for me. But it drives me nuts, these kids. You heard me ranting. I won't go into it anymore, man. But just how about this? give me your take on that situation, the 1 minute. Like, what do you think about that? A kid who's on a show like MasterChef Junior, doesn't even win, comes out and says, hey, now I'm a chef. I took a couple of online courses. I'm 15 years old. Now I'm a celebrity chef. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I'm honestly right there with you. I'm in a total agreeance with you. The word chef, you know, to earn that, you have to earn that title. And to earn that title, you have to work really hard. You have to pay a lot of dues. And for a kid who had never even worked, you know, properly worked a week's worth of shifts in a restaurant, you know, hasn't burned themselves on oil spillback or hasn't cut their fingertip ever so slightly, not deep enough to the point where it bleeds, but deep enough that when lemon juice gets in there, it stings like hell, but you have five other dishes to plate behind it. You know, that kid had never experienced those things. And for them to call themselves a chef, all those little things equal up to those merit badges to allow you to become a chef.
Right.
So for someone to go onto a television show I mean, not even a kid, but just anybody to go onto a television show and give themselves the rank of chef. I mean, I call bullshit. I agree with you, man.
Yeah, I almost want to challenge a kid to a competition, and I'll put one hand behind my back and tie it. You know why I was so fired up, brother? It's because you know what ProStart is, right? The high school program from the National Restaurant Association. It's a pretty big deal. I got asked to judge nationals this year, and I had literally just come back from judging nationals and all this happened. These kids have been working their asses off to try to get up the ranks, to get accepted to a culinary school, to get an internship working in a restaurant, working so hard. And then I get this email from this guy's PR group. I was, you got to be kidding me, dude. First of all, why do you have a PR group? Second of all, don't, if he had just said that, I would, if he had just worded it differently, I wouldn't have been so fucking on fire about it. But, you know, good. Well, that's enough. As long as I know that's where you are, we're on the same page. We can continue to talk now. So, dude, you're at, we'll kind of start at the top a little bit and work and just kind of jump around. But you're at Beauty Nexus right now. You work with a couple of really good brothers over there, and Tim, who I just adore. I love him. He's one of my favorite people on the entire fucking planet.
Shout out to Tim. Love Tim, man.
Dude, Tim is the man. And, of course, Derek Prince, another really good brother, another great guy. Hey, there's a guy. Came from a TV show and worked his ass off, didn't he, to get up there?
Yep. Oh, yeah. That man works real hard. I mean, Beauty in Essex and Stanton are really close by each other. And, you know, I know the man put in his blood, sweat, and tears for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But two good brothers there, and they spoke very, very highly of you. And half for a few months now talking to me and letting me know. And I was like, well, dude, I got to meet this guy. It was awesome to have the opportunity to chat with you for a few minutes at the hot sauce judging. But you're now the you're chef over at Beauty in Essex, right?
Yes, I'm the, you know, the I guess the official title is Chef de Cuisine. Yeah. I've been there, it'll be 1 year coming in July, so I'm fairly fresh and new to the company, but I love it, man. It feels like I've been there for way longer than that, but I think that's usually the case if you work really hard at any place. But I'm loving it. I love the team I have over there. I love the people that I work with. I love the challenge, and I love the food. Obviously, you know, I love the food over there, and it's just, I'm having a blast.
You know, I've ate at Vandal. I've ate at Stanton Social many times. I don't think I've ever been to Beauty in Essex yet. I think we tried to do my wife's 40th birthday there, but you guys were booked solid. We were trying to, like, rent a private room or something like that.
Well, I think we're going to have to make, I think we're going to have to change that very soon, my friend.
I love that idea. I love food. Can you tell? I mean, you look at me like there's no way that guy eats very much by that Adonis-like figure he has.
Well, you and I both, man. You and I both.
So how was
you
it
and I got
the
a little?
No, go ahead.
I'm sorry. What was that? No, go ahead, man.
No, you were gonna insult me, and I love it. You got a little wet. This is gonna be.
Oh no! I was just about to say you and I both got a couple of jelly rolls over our bellies. You know, nobody's looking at us and saying, "Let's get that guy a slice of pizza because he's starving."
That's right. That's right. You know what it is, man? I have a 6-pack. It's just in the fridge. That's all it is to it. I want to keep that shit cold. but you're at Beauty in Essex, man. You've been with the company for a year. You said you were digging it, man. I mean, being a chef de cuisine at a restaurant like that and working your way up, and I mean, very established, great crew. Are you working like every single day? Or are you getting a few days off? Is it still a pretty good scenario for like the work-life balance?
Yeah, as far as the work-life balance, I mean, per day, I'm working anywhere between 11 and 12 hours a day. If I'm lucky, it's a 10-hour day. But, you know, the company is structured in such a way that I'm still able to pretty much regularly have 2 days off a week, which is, you know, for me, something is extremely vital because I have so many other interests that I like to invest my time into, as well as being a family man. I have, you know, I'm married and I have a daughter and a little dog, and I want to make sure I give my family time too. So as busy as I am over there, you know, from the moment I walk into beauty to the moment I walk out, I am full on 110%. And when I get home, I literally crash out.
He's done.
But I still get to have my two days off a week. So, you know, work-life balance is good.
Good. That's important. I think having the 2 days off is important. I think but it all depends on having a great crew. Having a great crew allows that to happen. If your crew sucked, sorry, brother, you're working. But, you know, it's one of those things we were talking about last week, and it's interesting because I was trying to figure out, you know, there's not a lot of businesses where that's a normal, like, that's what we expect of you when you work, that you get the position of chef de cuisine. That's a career, like, you're doing well. Like, wait, you don't just work a 40-hour work week? And none of us do. I certainly don't. You know, but where does that come from? Why is that such the norm in our business? And I'd like to hear your thought. We thought, I think I came up with the right answer, but I want to know what you think. Why is that so accepted? It's okay.
That's something I've always thought about, but never was asked. I mean, I can only talk from my personal experience, and I think you know, whether this is your answer or not, I think you would agree with me. At the end of the day, it has to be from within. You have to genuinely want to succeed at your job, but on top of that, you have to genuinely love the work that you do. And if, not to say the work isn't hard, but if you genuinely enjoy what you do, you know, you realize that the hours that you are, those long hours that you're putting in, is all progressive and moving forward and accomplishing daily goals to hopefully accomplish longer term goals.
Right.
And on top of that, there's a whole thing about consistency. You know, the meal that goes out at the beginning of the night when your cooks are fully energized, to the meal that goes out at the end of the night when your cooks want to cry, has to be consistent, has to be the same, has to be of the same quality and of the same flavors. And the only way that you're going to be able to accomplish that is if you invest the time into your work, whether that's your sous chefs or whether that's your cooks, you know, whoever it is that needs to make sure those checks and balances are in place to make sure those standards are upheld. And for me, that's the only way I know how to do it, is to stay in that restaurant and make sure those standards are being enforced. That would be the simplest and quickest answer for me.
Yeah, I think you're kind of right on point with that. I think it just becomes you're going to make my answer sound like you're smarter than me, but I think what you're saying is
give yourself more credit than that.
I haven't said it yet, brother. Hang on. it's to me, I think it really does come down to just this as simple as this. We're young cooks starting this business. Most of us are young, trying to pay our rent, do our thing. Like, you work a morning shift. If they ask you to work a double, okay, I'll work. And next thing you know, you're working for your overtime. Like, you're working to make that 50 hours a week so you can get a little overtime on your paycheck so you can pay your bills. It just kind of becomes what we're used to, what the job is, kind of what it's so normal to us to do that. Like, from starting off as a dishwasher and being called in on your day off to wash dishes because the other guy called out or wrecked his car or who knows what, whatever fucking crazy reason it is, to being on the line and learning a new station, then all of a sudden that you have to work both stations, it becomes what we're used to doing. So then when you finally hit that role of chef de cuisine, executive chef, that sort of role, your own restaurant, you're running a place or whatever the business is that you're in charge of, you don't know another way to do it. There's no other way to do it. Like you said, you don't know how to, I wouldn't know what to do. If I was told, oh, you get to work 5 days a week, 8 hours a day. Oh, and by the way, you get an hour break. What?
Yeah, I would feel guilty. That's the thing. Like,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. You feel guilty for it because, you know, those guys are humping away and busting their ass, and you're like, oh, I'm going to go fishing.
I mean, there are days where, you know, I've left early to go do something personal, and I literally feel guilty as I walk out, like I'm leaving my brothers behind. You know, a leader marches with their army. A leader doesn't whip their army behind them to move forward. And I just feel like it leads a good example. Now, with that said, you know, I'm a chef de cuisine that still gets to have 2 days off a week. Every once in a while, I have to come in for a sixth day. But overall, I just want to be there as much as possible, again, to make sure that those quality standards are upheld to the exact standard that they need to be.
Balance, man. It is all about balance. And people who have made it in this business and are doing well for themselves and supporting their family, they found the balance. And it sounds like you found it, which is amazing. I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah, it definitely came a bit later in my career. There's also, you know, you spoke about balance. It's so vital. Finding that balance in your own life in this business is so vital to longevity. Because if you don't find some form of balance, inevitably you will burn out. And I have burnt out on numerous occasions. I've had mental breakdowns. I've had, you know, I've quit the business. Before I started at Beauty, I pretty much for the most part quit the business. We can get into that later. But it, yeah, as far as finding that balance, that's something I've only kind of stumbled upon maybe this past year, year and 2 months. So it's relatively new.
It's tough, man, but when you find it, it feels really, really good. And talking about breakdowns, man, just a quick story. I was, like I said, I was judging the Pro Start Nationals this year, last weekend, weekend before last, excuse me. And the last team that came up, I'm not going to name the teams, that'd be really fucked up because they're kids. But they were not very happy with their dish. I mean, one of the people on the team, the girl was already almost in tears, and she put it in front of the judges, right, on the table. I was doing entrees, myself and four of the chefs. And we get to, we taste it, we score it, and then we get 2 minutes to talk to them, like talk to the team. And so I go to talk to the team. And you have to be honest. I think that we could tell the people how great they are the entire time, and everything they've done right. And I think there's a lot to do with that, and you should do that. But I think you have to be honest too and tell them what they messed up. Again, has to be
Right.
balanced, right? You can't go in there and just crush them. You can't do that. That's not going to do any, they're going to
Right.
shut down immediately.
Right,
So I
right.
tell them what I liked, which wasn't much. So you try to find something. Congratulations for being here. It's so amazing you made it. That sort of thing, right? But the dish, I mean, the dish was, it's the nationals of a giant competition. And they put a piece of corn on the cob on the plate, chef. I was losing my mind, and the plate was ice cold.
Oi.
So I was pointing it out to it, and this girl, bro, she breaks down full on like hyperventilating type crying as I'm talking to her. And I had to stop, and I said, "Listen, I know this is hard. And I know that you're young, and this is the most important thing that you've done to this point in your life." And I said, "But if you want a career in this business, finish your crying now and be done. No more. No more." I said, "Because you're going to get knocked down way more than you're going to get lifted up. But every time you get knocked down, you get up, you get right back up. And you remember the blue-haired dude that talked to you when you were in high school and told you keep standing there. No matter what happens, you stand right there and you take it.
Yeah.
And you try to learn as much as you can from that and you move on." And I said, "If you can do that, then you'll get better. And when you'll get better and you won't get knocked down, but again," I said, "just keep getting back up. Just keep standing because it's not going to get any easier."
Yeah. Wise words, my friend.
I mean, it's the truth. And if you can't stand it, I mean, if you can't even stand, like take, you can't stand there and take it, you're in the wrong business. And
Yeah,
I mean, I wasn't
absolutely.
even
And that.
being that hard. I had pans thrown at me, dude. Like I wasn't throwing anything at her.
It's such a unique business in the sense that it requires so much creativity and so much heart to, yeah, and of course there's an aspect of talent involved, but I always, I mean, feel free to disagree with me, but I always find that very creative people are usually very in touch with their emotions, and people who are very in touch with their emotions could also, not all of them, but tend to also be kind of sensitive. And I think
True.
what separates the chefing world from other arts is that there's a certain amount of machismo involved where, someone's shit talking me, well, I'm gonna shit talk right back.
Right.
But at the same time, that's just a defense mechanism for how they really feel, which is sensitive, right? So when for such a young cook, for them to get critiqued and to break down like that to me isn't surprising at all because they've invested so much of themselves into that dish. And, if only everything can be won by effort, but that's not the case. You're judging a serious competition and the best dish wins. And I think what you did is really like a pleasant trend that I'm seeing in mentorship in the chefing world. I think it's the right direction to go where it's not so much focused on the machismo, but really, again, going back to that balance of identifying to them what you liked about something, but being very clear about what you don't like about something, and identifying to them that if you can't take this criticism, if you can't take this criticism in, then the door's over there and you might as well walk out because you are going to hear more criticism before you hear compliments.
Yes, and I bet in your lifetime, if you put them on a scale, the compliments don't outweigh the criticism. That's my guess.
Oh, no way. No way, man. I mean, I still get criticized. I still have a boss to answer to. I still present dishes that I feel are strong dishes, and they'll say, "I'm not liking this. This doesn't work." And I take it. And because at the end of the day, I feel like if you keep yourself opened up to other people's knowledge, you're only improving upon yourself. You know, and I think that's why I enjoy working with Chris Santos and enjoy working with Sarah Nelson and Timo and Derek, because it's just this network of really strong chefs who aren't afraid to tell you the honest truth. And at the end of the day, it only makes you a better chef. And you know what? These chefs come to me and ask my opinion all the time, too.
Sure.
And they're the ones that sometimes have to critique me. It has to be a cycle that goes around constantly and keeps you in check. You know, it's about those checks and balances that I believe will help you move forward.
I mean, two things about it, man. Number one, I'm going to go backwards in my thoughts, but what you just said there, God, is there anything better than having a group of creative people like making something awesome like that together, like presenting a dish to a bunch of chefs and everyone talks about it and it, you know, comes up with something just amazing with it. There's not a better feeling than that in the world. I love that. That's one of my favorite things in the business. But two, brother, have you ever thought about doing like mentoring type stuff? I tell you what, listen, it's once a year, the Pro Start thing, it's done by the National Restaurant Association. You'd be awesome at it, bro.
I mean, I would, I'm honored that you're even thinking about me for that. I feel like a good chef should be a mentor, and a good chef should be giving honest criticism, because that's part of the job. We're much more than cooks at that point. That's why we're no longer called a cook. We're called a chef. We're freaking plumbers. We're freaking therapists.
We work with our hands.
Yeah, we do everything and anything that the business requires us to do to get through to our cooks to have them accomplish the job that needs to be done. Mentoring to me is extremely important. That's why I'm involved in mental health awareness and suicide prevention. If you don't mind me plugging something right now, Chef. So this Wednesday at Vandal in New York City, Vandal Restaurant, which is located at 199 Bowery. Chris Santos's restaurant. We are going to be holding a fundraiser together with Chef Chris Santos, myself, and also Jesse Leach of the band Killswitch Engage, and Jamie Josta of Hatebreed. Also, Eddie Ojeda of Twisted Sister will be making an appearance. We are holding a fundraiser benefiting the nonprofit Hope for the Day, which is a legit 501c3 nonprofit organization that is active in mental health awareness and suicide prevention. So if you are in New York, please pop on down to Vandal for this amazing cause. 100% of the proceeds goes to Hope for the Day for this amazing cause. And I'd love to see you there. Come hang out. Come have a drink with me. There'll be past food, a limited open bar, and amazing raffle prizes if you so choose to take part in. So, yeah, definitely come by and hang out. You can go onto the website smallbitesofhope.org. If you cannot attend, you can make a donation. If you can attend, buy tickets. You can buy it right through the website and then just show up the day of the event and we'll let you right in to enjoy the festivities.
There you go. That sounds awesome. We'll plug that again also too so we can get that out there and make sure that people know that that's what's up. Because this event sounds great, man. I wish I could come. I'm still working on it. There's still hope, man. I just got to... It's freaking, you know how it goes, man.
No, I feel you. Trust me, I know all too well. And this is an annual event. So even if you can't make it this year,
very cool,
we will have another one next year.
Dude, I'm willing to help. Happy to help out whenever I can or do whatever you need. Especially with a little heads up, I can do whatever you need. So don't hesitate.
Appreciate it, brother.
And as far as the ProStart thing goes too, man, we should talk about that. Cause, I mean, I'm not an ambassador or anything, but I just think you'd be awesome at it. And it's easy to, they pay for your hotel, they take care of you, so we should make that happen, because I think you'd be badass.
Yeah.
And really good.
Yeah, I want to hear more for sure. I'm definitely interested. I'd love to mentor young and up-and-coming cooks. Definitely sign me up.
No doubt about it. All right, so check this out, man. I want to talk a little bit about your story, because your story is absolutely insane. I'm trying to figure out where to start. Like at the beginning, or should we start like with you playing in a touring band? Let's go with there, man. Band that like toured China, like a thrashcore band, right?
I did, and you know what? I am gonna start from the beginning because it's all within context. around the age of 13, 14, I wasn't the best kid. I wasn't the worst kid in town, but I definitely wasn't the best kid. And my parents definitely felt the need to make a major change in my life. I was born and raised in Flushing, Queens, New York. My father is Chinese. My mother's Korean. They speak terrible English to one another. Thus, I grew up speaking terrible English. So I grew up speaking English, but I still had to go to ESL, which was really weird.
Hey, for what it's right, for what, listen, that's funny, but for what it's worth, brother, I grew up down south in Virginia, so I speak terrible English also. Just throwing that out there.
You make me feel so much better. Thank you. When I was 13 turning 14, my dad came up to me and he basically said, listen, I'm giving you one of two choices. You can go to military school at Valley Forge, which is upstate, or you can go to China for an exchange program in a boarding school. So my reply was, well, both of them sound pretty sucky, but if I go to China, at least I can see the Great Wall, because I had always wanted to see the Great Wall. So I chose to go to China, sent me over there, and once I got there, I didn't have any friends. I didn't speak the language. I didn't speak Chinese or Korean. Yeah, I was in China, so Korean wouldn't do me any good anyway, but I didn't speak the language, didn't have friends, and all I had with me was my guitar, my clothes, a couple of Metallica and Pantera guitar books, and an amplifier.
Yeah.
So what did I do when
too,
I got
right?
there?
We're not talking music.
Tablature.
We're talking tab.
No, no, not music.
Books, right?
Tablature books. Yeah, tablature books.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't
vulgar,
know,
I had the Vulgar Display tab book. I had the Vulgar Display tab book.
Yeah. So I mean, classic riffs, right? I mean, super heavy, just so much fun to play, and that's all I did for like 2 years was just play guitar. That's when I really honed my craft, so to speak. And I started a band in China, and that quickly turned into mainland China's first touring metal band. So the band consisted of, I went to an international school, so it consisted of two local Chinese people, two local Chinese guys, and two German school guys, and myself, and everyone knew us as this international band and based in Beijing, China. And you know, I grew up watching MTV and VH1 with all these documentaries telling you about how bands like Pantera, Megadeth, and Metallica came to be, and how they would throw all their equipment in the back of a, not even a van, but their parents' station wagon, and drive 5 hours from LA to San Francisco and play a show and drive back and go to school the next day. I was so inspired by that. So I said, fuck it, we're going to set up a tour, and we're going to do it on trains, because we don't even have cars. So we carried all our equipment and took trains between from town to town. And yeah, the band was called Hollow. We had a lot of great success in the underground, and it was a blast, man. The Chinese underground metal scene is just incredible. I mean, they don't, back then at least, this was, you know, 99, 2000. I think when we were touring, it was like 02, 03 at that point. We didn't get big acts coming into China at that time. You know, we had at one point Deep Purple come through. And I think that's the only major act that I can remember, you know, as far as rock and metal coming through to mainland China. So for a local band to come from one town to another town within China was huge. So without having any type of release and just releasing a couple of rough demos on the internet, we packed out venues. And when I say venues, it's like 300, 400 person capacity rooms. But still, that was unheard of at the time. Yeah.
That's still pretty dope. I mean, shit, that's awesome. It's funny. I got to imagine, too, there's not a lot of like, you know, like metal music kind of happening. I guess like a metal scene really happening over there. Am I wrong, or is it there? It's not big?
That you would actually be wrong. It's just that there's no such thing as mainstream metal or rock and roll in China. So it's huge within the underground. I mean, at the time it was 1.2 billion people. So take 10% of that. That's still a fuck ton of people who, you know, 10% of 1.2 billion. So I'm not to say that only 10% of the population listens to metal. In fact, it's probably more like one or two, but that's still a lot of people.
A lot of people. Now, was it lucrative? Yeah. Did you actually make money doing this? Was it like a positive thing as far as that goes, or was it more like a labor of love scenario?
It was definitely a labor of love. And even when I left the country due to, you know, a problem with drugs and alcohol at towards the end, we can get into that later, but it was always a passion project. So I had no qualms about ending the band. When I left, I told them, I said, the band's over, I'm out, I'm sorry, it's not happening. I wanted to keep artistic integrity if I wasn't going to be part of it. However, with that said, we were too young and stupid to keep track of the money. Right. We did make some money towards the end of it, but nothing major, you know, nothing major at all. All that money we would spend on whiskey and beer by the end of the night.
That don't make you a bad person. That don't make you a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
At all.
Not at all.
So this goes on and you travel but in your traveling, man, you just started learning about like foods and stuff, right?
Yes. So, you know, I didn't start cooking until I returned to the United States when I was 19, but I got there when I was 14. And one thing that living abroad really exposed me to was different cuisines. And yes, I am Chinese and Korean by descent, but growing up in a place like Flushing, Queens, as close to Manhattan as it is, I was really a small-minded, small-town kid at heart. I ate a lot of fast food, and I ate my parents' cooking, and that was about it. But when I moved to China, I was exposed to different regions of Chinese cooking. But I was also exposed to all this international cuisine because I went to an international school, so I was eating authentic German food, authentic French food, authentic Russian food, authentic Italian food. And it really just, you know, to me, Italian food was spaghetti and meatballs. But here I am having this pesto lasagna with, you know, house red wine. I'm only 17 at the time, but it's totally legal for me to go to a restaurant in China and order that. So it really opened my eyes up to the possibilities of what food can be. And at the time, the conversion rate of U.S. dollars to Chinese renminbi was a lot better. So I was able to afford a lot of high dining experiences. And that's really when I feel like I got bit by the stomach, not the stomach bug, the food bug.
Right. Stomach bug.
And real. I got several stomach bugs while I was in China too, but that's besides the point. But China was really the introduction to the food world for me.
Man, I mean, what an exciting way to get into it too, and to learn more about it by traveling and being in there. And I mean, it just playing music and traveling and doing it. That's awesome. And then, but you come back here and then you go to school, right?
No. So I came back and, you know, I was all strung up on drugs, and I had cut drugs out of my life cold turkey. So when I was living in China, it was really when the drug epidemic was hitting China pretty hard. When I was there, no one knew what pot was. No one knew what hard drugs were. They were very naive to it. So I remember making a bong out of a water bottle and smoking it while I'm walking past Tiananmen Square, and all of the army soldiers didn't know what the hell I was doing. I would smoke joints in the back of a taxi cab, and the taxi driver would say, "Oh, that's a very interesting cigarette. Can I get one?" I would roll them up a joint and give them one. You know, and there's also a lot of corruption in China. So I would go to a club and I would order a Long Island iced tea and a hit of E. I know no one does E anymore, but, you know, back then, yeah, E was the thing, and I would get some ecstasy. And towards the end when I was leaving is when you could really get any drug under the sun. So cocaine, ice, heroin, all these things were available. And I was young and stupid and experimental. So the day that I decided to leave China, I woke up, I drank a beer, I smoked a joint. I then met up with a friend, took a hit of E, at some point started getting tired, snorted several lines of coke, couldn't fall to sleep. By that point, it was like 3 or 4 in the morning, and I did heroin for the first time. And that was the moment I knew I had to leave China, because I knew I enjoyed heroin so much. I knew if I stayed, I would die from it. So wow. I woke up the next morning and I called up my dad. I said, it's time for me to come home. Simple as that. And I packed my bags, left a week later, came back, and with no direction in life, here I am, this college dropout, because I finished high school in China, but I dropped out of college very quickly after I had started to focus on my music career. And I came back to the States, no education really. I just played guitar, and I was just a young, able, strong young man. So I went to my father, who is a small business owner, and I said, Dad, I've been working for you since I was 12 years old. So while I'd love to get into the family business, I'd like to work for someone else and get some work experience from someone else. And he said, I know just the guy. He connected me with a gentleman named Michael Hu, Hu spelled H-U. He's a really amazing, amazing pastry chef. And he was the executive pastry chef at the Waldorf Astoria. He was the executive pastry chef at the Grand Hyatt, and he had recently left the Grand Hyatt to start his own business. So he had a wholesale pastry factory in Industry City, Brooklyn. So my father sent me over to him, and I started washing dishes for the man at the age of 19. I'm 34 now, and the rest is history. Now I'm the chef de cuisine at Beauty in Essex.
Man, what a crazy story. Seriously, it's just awesome to see that. I don't know. What I'm trying to say is just to see how the experiences really kind of shape where you're going, you know? I mean, it's a really great story. I'm getting my phone's blowing up right now with messages, people saying, wow, what a great story. What a great story.
thanks for listening, everybody. Fact, appreciate it.
We'll throw this out there. In Myrtle Beach, want me to ask you, he's got it right here. He runs a really great restaurant in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. He's like the best chef in Myrtle Beach every year. He's a great guy. He says, with all your experiences, what today still inspires you to continue going, moving forward?
Oh, there's no single thing. There's no single answer. I think above everything else is my family. You and I were talking about it off air, how much fatherhood changes you. The moment you see your child, you know, you think you know what love is. You know, you love your parents, you love your girlfriend, you love your wife, you love your dog. But man, you don't know love until you love a child. That completely, that completely changed my outlook on life. So first and foremost, I keep going for my family. You know, there's nothing more important to me than that. That's first and foremost. The next thing is, it's for myself. You know, if I don't stay busy, you know, I'm super ADD. I'm not diagnosed, but I'm pretty sure I'm dyslexic. If I don't keep myself busy with some form of mentally challenging physical work, I will literally, go crazy. When I quit the restaurant business, before I started at Beauty in Essex, there was this eight month period where I was just kind of floating around. I would do odd catering gigs here and there, but I was also working at a guitar shop. I was working at a farm in South Jersey. I was doing all kinds of things for 8 months, and it was driving my wife nuts. She's really happy I'm back in the business. As much as the hours suck for her, because a lot of the time she has to watch her daughter alone, she sees me again being very productive and progressive and moving forward with my life. And then finally,
Kevin,
I'm sorry.
Kevin just said, amen. Amen. You do it for yourself. That's what I wanted to hear. So that's good.
Yeah. And then I think one last thing that keeps me motivating is actually doing things that doesn't involve cooking. So for example, for me, that's music. I only recently realized that how there's a lot of people who work this day job so that they can be a weekend rock star at their local pub to play a gig. For me, that was my mentality for a while, but it was only recently for myself, I realized one feeds the other. I need to be an active chef in order to be a good or a creative musician. And if I'm a creative musician, that fuels my creativity for cooking. And those are the three core things I would say that keep me going.
I mean, you're right on point there. I think it's one of those things, you know, it just, first of all, you're ADD from all the cocaine use. Think about it. How many times have you ever bought cocaine and saved some for later? That never happens. We never get any cater for later. That's not how it works. I'm joking, of course. I mean, period. But I'm just saying, like, that's the ADD. All right, never mind. Not anymore. We're family people. That's where it comes from. That was a terrible joke. I kind of wish I didn't say that on the radio now. But oh well, whatever. We'll go with it.
Hey, it's out there, man. No worries. You can't. Yeah. Don't take it back. Own it, bro.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, can we cut that part out?
oh wait, it's fine. Too late.
Yeah. Shit. but you know, it's interesting because. You know, you have guys like, you know, for instance, the guy who sent that question, Chef Kevin, down in where he lives, man, he's just talking about how much he can relate. And yeah, by the way, he says, thank you for answering his question. He really appreciates it. You're right, man. I think the creativity is a super important part of what we do. For me, you know, I host a show called Restaurant Road Trip. It does really well. But no matter what happens, I still always will want to, you know, get paid for cooking food. Like that's what I'll do. Like it's always been there for me. It's always helped me be there. Doing it makes me more creative. When I can go and, you know, in the summertime, I'm in Montauk around this most amazing fish you could think of in the world. Like it's there and it's so fresh and my brain just starts going a million miles an hour. But in that moment, that's when I have the balance because I'm not thinking about anything else. All I'm thinking about is this scallop that's in this shell or this piece of sea bass I just got right out of the water. Like that's where it is. For me, that's when like ultimate balance is there in my brain where I'm like, I'm in the cut. Like I'm right there. Like I'm there. And that allows me to be creative on other things. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally. I mean, there's nothing more exciting than going to a local farmer's market. And you know what? It doesn't have to be a farmer's market. It doesn't have to be from farm to table, but for me, it's, you know, if I go to a, you know, a small town and they have the only thing they have is a farmer's market, there's nothing more exciting than touching and smelling that fresh, fragrant produce. And you know you're in a good place when you can smell the strawberries from like 15 feet away. There's no greater sensation for any chef, I think, than to smell your produce and fresh fish that smells like clean seawater. You know, that umami aroma that floats around the meat section. There's nothing more exciting than feeling those sensations because those are your paints, those are your tools, those are your guitar strings, those are the things that you use to create your quote unquote music. But in this case, it's going to be your dish. And then, like you said, when you were talking about, you know, you have all these cylinders firing off and you're getting all creative, you gave me goosebumps because I started getting goosebumps. I started remembering moments where I would walk in and see this, you know, we see steaks every day, but then once in a while you walk into a really nice market, or sometimes if you're lucky, a local old school Italian owned, you know, meat market, and you see the most amazing steak. And for some reason, you're just compelled to it, and you walk to it, and you choose it, and you get it in your hands, and you're so excited to get home and throw on that cast iron or, you know, or the grill, and it's suddenly the most amazing piece of meat in the world. You know, all those sensations, man, it just gives me goosebumps, and that's why I'm in it. It's just that sensation of knowing that I can not only give sustenance to myself and to others, but I can be creative with it as well.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. And I'm getting, people are asking me, if you want to connect with Chef Brian, you can find him at Chef Brian Sao. That's TSAO on Instagram. So you can find him on there if you want to check him out there. But I think that, you know what it is, man? It's, I don't know. I lost my train of thought there because you got me thinking about steaks, and that's not good.
We're talking about creativity and firing on all cylinders, and
right. I think it's one of those things where it's so. these farmers, they work hard. Like you talk about going to farmers markets and places like that, or even a great, you know, here where I live, I work with Edible Magazine sometimes, and we did a show called Edible Nutmeg on the Road because Edible Nutmeg Magazine. I went to a bison farm, and you watch how hard these guys work. Like, I think as chefs, it's our responsibility. These people are trying to give us the best product they can possibly give it, that we have to respect it, and we have to present it in the best possible way that we can do it. Because if they're going to spend so much time busting their ass and working hard on it, then by God, we should do the same thing. We owe it to these guys who are out there working, you know, tooth and nail to make amazing tomatoes, strawberries, bison meat, whatever it may be. Fishermen who are out there harvesting oysters or harvesting scallops or, you know, catching tuna. Like, it's our job to make sure that that stuff is awesome because they're trying to give us the best thing they can give. You know, it's almost like
paying. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there is just as much artistry that goes into farming and fishing and, you know, butchery as there is into cooking. And unfortunately, what's really sexy right now to the general public is the end result, which is the cooked plate of food on your table. But man, there is a taco truck right by here that makes the most amazing lengua tacos. And for those of you who don't know what lengua is, it's cow tongue. It's just braised cow tongue.
Delicious.
You know, it's absolutely delicious. And for the butcher to be able to fabricate that tongue while everyone's buying the steaks, and then this guy is able to procure this and create this dish out of it, man, you know, the steps that had to get that tongue sold, the steps that it took to, you know, what type of soil this certain leafy green grew in, will greatly affect the end result. I remember when I was on my hiatus from the chefing industry, working in farms in South Jersey, because it was something I was really interested in. I had always wanted to ride on a tractor trailer, and I quickly regretted that at some point.
Funny. Yeah, okay.
Because I was on the tractor for maybe 5 minutes, and then the rest was just my neck to the beaming sun. And anyway, the artistry that goes into growing things and raising things, man, you know, it's just so underrated. And I think it's definitely not underrated within the chefing community. But again, it's just not sexy to talk about into the general public. Thus, it's not as widely publicized and as popular as chefs themselves. But, you know, if to any of the chefs that are listening to this, I definitely urge you to get to know where your stuff's coming from. Of course, there's a certain limit to that. We're all busy, but definitely educate your cooks, and definitely educate your guests. Because that's definitely your opportunity it's definitely your opportunity to give the spotlight to the people who actually literally create our food.
Yeah, that's what's up. And, you know, it just goes right there with, we were talking about how, you know, the word chef and kind of what it means earlier. And to me, you know, I think that a real chef in this business is the guy who, when everything is going right, all he does is talk about how great his cooks are and how great of a team he has. When everything falls to shit, he talks about how it's his fault. That's a leader.
Absolutely. That is a leader, man.
Giving props to your crew, giving props to your produce guy, your fish guy. It's all part of the game, man. It's all part of the game. Man, what a deep conversation, huh? I didn't know we were gonna go here.
Yeah, awesome. This is great. We're really cracking open some earth over here, man.
I told you it'd go fast, dude. Look, we're at 11 o'clock already. How crazy is that? It goes quick as shit, doesn't it?
Shit. Already? Jesus. Oh, that's awesome. Dude, I'm having a blast.
I'm
3 beers in.
Dude,
right,
I got to talk to you, too. Awesome, bro. I'm so glad to hear it. I got to talk to you, too, a little bit about being on Beat Bobby Flay. You know, I've done my fair share of shows on the network. You did the Beat Bobby Flay thing, man. How was that for you? Was it a lot of fun?
Oh, yeah, it was a total blast. It's funny. The year before I did Beat Bobby Flay, I was on Chopped.
Yeah.
And it was my first television appearance. I was extremely nervous. But on top of that...
Was Santos your judge?
No, Santos was not my judge. It was...
Okay.
Who was it? It was Marcus Samuelson, Aaron Sanchez, and Amanda Freitag. And I was so nervous. But the crazy thing is, you know, to when you get selected to do CHOP to the day you film the episode is a long time. So
Oh,
when
yeah.
I was selected to do CHOPs, I had my own restaurant at the time. And by the time I did CHOPs, that restaurant had gone out of business.
You didn't
So,
have it anymore.
yeah, I didn't have it anymore. But right before the show, I was due to film the show. The restaurant had closed, literally like within 3 weeks before I had to film the show. The restaurant had closed. I was had to go on my honeymoon. I got married 2 months before that, so I had to go on my honeymoon with my wife to Malaysia. My wife's from Malaysia, which was an incredible trip. Amazing food in Malaysia. Went to Malaysia. I got norovirus. For those of you who don't know what norovirus is, basically you're excreting from both ends nonstop in extreme pain. So I got norovirus while I was there. Came back. I had just barely recovered. I was jet lagged. And I had just opened up the last restaurant I was at called Mira Sushi and Izakaya
But did you
in
have to
3 days.
say
I had. It was just the most appropriate term. I'm sorry, bud.
worst word ever.
No, it's all good, man. So I went on to CHOP after all that. And while when I got CHOP, it was funny because I was saying to myself, yeah, you know, I was nervous and I wasn't proud of my dish or anything, but the way they edit those episodes, man, it makes
Oh,
you.
yeah.
When I saw that I got chopped, I was pissed. I was like, yeah, why'd I get chopped, man? I should have gone on to the next
Right?
round. But yeah, all because of how they edit. So when you guys
Yeah.
are watching TV, keep that in mind.
Oh, yeah, we've talked about that
But
a lot. Yeah, man, that's for sure.
I had lost chops, and that really fueled a lot of determination and anger going into Beat Bobby Flay. So I was really, you know, Sylvester Stallone, Rocky Balboa, you know, training
Nice.
really hard. I was eating well. I was exercising. I was also doing mystery baskets. I was timing myself. I was timing myself for 20 minutes rather than 30 minutes. I was going hardcore. So when I went into Beat Bobby Flay, I was super, super, super prepared.
Damn. Go ahead, brother. There you go. The problem with a show like that is, though, is that there's no prize.
Well, yeah, the prize is street cred, right?
Literally, like,
Yeah.
it's fun to do, man. And I haven't seen your episode. I'm gonna look for it on YouTube because I want to see. Because I'm pretty sure you're a pretty good talker. So I got a feeling you're running your mouth a little bit. I hope you were at
A
least.
little bit,
That's the fun part.
definitely.
That's the fun.
At the very end of the episode, I give one of those Ric Flair woos.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm talking. Woo! Oh shit, dude.
Yeah.
I'm an old pro wrestling fan. You have no idea.
Oh, you and
That's
I
awesome,
both,
man.
man. I was fucking part of Hulkamania.
Were you really? Dude, I've had DDP on this program.
Oh, no way. You know, I don't
Yeah.
follow wrestling today, but you know, fucking,
But
you know,
he's,
late
yeah.
80s, 90s wrestling. Oh, love it.
All right, look, I'll break the fourth wall then. So I just texted Jake the Snake Roberts about trying to get him a date set for him to be on this program to talk about food and traveling. How awesome would that be?
That would be incredible.
Fucking Jake the Snake. Well, dude, it's funny, man, because you do those shows, and the good part about it is, and I was joking when I kind of said, you know, the street cred, who cares about that? But the thing with that is that you get a lot from that if you're willing to use it and promote yourself and do things with it. No one's gonna come knocking on your door because you won Chopped or because you did. Trust me, I know. Like, that's not gonna happen.
Right.
But if you want to use that to
Right.
promote yourself, to start doing local TV, start doing more stuff like that, it is a good thing for your business. I think all of these shows, and it's a problem with some of the generation today, all of these shows and things like that, it's not because I don't host Restaurant Road Trip because I'm like, hey, I'm a chef and I want to host a show. I got to do it because I worked my ass off for it. It's a byproduct of working my ass off for
Right.
25 years in the business. You know, that's where it came from. You
Right.
doing those shows is a byproduct of what you've done. You know, that's what's happened because you worked hard.
You hit the nail on the head. I mean, at the end of the day, people should look at it as a marketing tool because, in all honesty, how many of the chefs do you remember, or the contestants, I should say, do you remember from Food
None.
Network Star? How many of the contestants do you remember from Top Chef? How many contestants do you remember from Master Chef? I mean, really, only a handful. you still have to hustle, you know, you still have to make things happen. And that is one word I go back to all the time is no matter how much success you have, you still have to hustle, because even if you gain success, people may say winning Bobby Flay is a huge success. Well, no, it's about maintaining the success after you've been given an opportunity that really matters.
Well, and we're seeing that stuff kind of go on a downtrend now. I'm sure working with Santos, you know all the stuff that's going on with Food Network. Like, they had a lot of trouble, a lot of financial issues. That's why the castings are kind of falling to shit now. And there's no Food Network star this season. And they got bought by Discovery Channel for like 60 cents on the dollar or some shit like that. I mean,
holy crap.
I filmed a pilot for them. Oh, yeah. They almost were totally gone. I did a pilot for them. A few months back, their pilot, they contracted me to do it. It had nothing to do with me. They called me and they paid a bunch of money for it, and then they stopped production on everything because their scripts was having problems. The reason why, because everything is a competition show now. Like, even like shows like this where you watch real chefs like yourself, those are still there and it's great to see, but more and more we're seeing more of like the Great Baking Championship with Vern Troyer, the last members of TLC and Vanilla Ice all baking against each other. Who cares? Nobody cares.
Right.
I mean, dude, Emerald Live, that show was awesome. My man Jamie Oliver and The Naked Chef, that show was awesome. Bring back the food. Bring back the cooking of the food, man. That's what we want.
I think it's kind of similar to what happened to MTV. You know, your MTV stands for music television, and, you know, they've lost their way. You know, I don't want to shit talk on Food Network too much because you know, my employer is a big part of them, but especially in today's day and age with social media and technology, things are moving so fast, and the way people are consuming their media is changing so rapidly, and it's really just about evolving with those times.
Well, brother, that's it. That's right there is it, man. I mean, listen, and that's part of the problem. And we're not really shit talking the network. Don't worry. I mean, they don't make any of their own content. Everything's made through third party production companies. So it's cool. We can say
no one
can be mad. But that was part of the point too. And I'm kind of talking tongue in cheek a little bit. But they had no digital plan. There was no, you know, everything. We all have these 5-inch screens in our pocket now, which is how we consume content. And you know, that's and you'll see. I'm segueing pretty nicely here in a second. I want some credit for that. But that's what we do now. We all have this content in our pocket, and that's how we do things. I mean, look, my show, I'm on television here in Connecticut, and nobody cares at the television station. All they care about is how many views we get on YouTube or how many views we get on Facebook. And that's a television company run by a big company called Nexstar. Like, it's a big company, and they don't even care what the ratings are. They just don't care anymore. All they care is about digital content and what views and how that's going, which is kind of something that you're involved in now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't even own a cable box anymore. I have Apple TV no one does anymore. And I don't know what the latest TV show is anymore. I stopped watching Walking Dead a long time ago.
All right.
For me, 99% of my consumption of media is on the internet, and what's really different about the internet content is that a lot of us got to grow with it as opposed to already having the TV there and just consuming what's being given to us. We can now be truly selective about what we want to watch.
Brother,
guitar channel? Well, here, take your pick. Here's a guy who plays like Eddie Van Halen. Here's a guy who's a historian, Eddie Van Halen. You don't like Eddie Van Halen? Or here's a guy who does exclusively punk. You know, you literally can pick and choose whatever the hell you want. And that, to me, was really fascinating because you watch YouTube shows from just a year ago and watch them today. You can literally notice the development of that artist, of that content creator, whether it's from being able to speak on camera better, whether it's better editing skills, whether it's a better camera. Some of these guys don't even care. They still film everything on their iPhones. And that was really inspirational to me. It felt so empowering. And that's why I got involved in it, because everything was now within my control. And I did it for myself. And that's what Chop and Shred is. It's a show I do for myself.
Well, and I want to talk about it, but just talking about the quick two things, man, you're talking about filming on your iPhones. I just got the X, and I'll tell you what, man, it shoots in 4K. It's amazing what it does. Like, it's crazy what it does. I tell a lot of young cooks I talk to these days, I said, learn how to cook food the right way, understand what a bassinet is, understand what a brunoise is, and learn Final Cut Pro. That's what I tell them all.
Yeah.
I'm serious. Like, that's where it's going. Learn how to edit.
Seriously.
It,
I mean, you know, everyone is so empowered to be able to put themselves out there and give themselves exposure. True, there's a lot more noise to get through now, but you still have that opportunity to put yourself out there. No one is stopping you, so you might as well take it and learn all the tools you need to be successful at it.
Dude, Chop and Shred's pretty dope, man. I checked out the first episode. It's kind of cool. You're working with a guitar store there locally with you, and are you testing equipment? Because you were showing, like, you're using this pedal board. You're showing kind of how you're using it, what you're, and for those you don't know, a pedal board, plug your guitar into it. I'm talking totally layman terms here, Chef, for people. You plug your guitar into it, there's different effects. It makes your guitar sound differently before it goes, comes out of the amp. That's pretty much what it is. And but you're showing like different tones, different sounds with it, and you're playing it, and then out of nowhere, you're like, now I'm going to make you a sunny side up egg.
Right. So Chop and Shred, I have to give credit to my friend Ollie Herbert of the band All That Remains. He was the one that coined the show name. I had this idea for a show because I am literally a chef and a musician. And I was thinking for the longest time, how do I create content out of that? And at some point I said to myself, fuck it, I'm not going to try anymore. I am literally going to take these two things and smush them together and do it unapologetically. So I love guitar. I love music. I love guitar gear. It's like a chef who loves having all different types of knives or having, you know, 15 different cheeses on their menu. There's no explanation for it. It's just something you enjoy. So for me, Chop and Shred is one part guitar gear review show and one part cooking show. And it's a monthly series that I kicked off in April. I produce it, direct it, do everything on my own for the most part. I have some help for the cooking segment as far as the production goes. But I only have enough time to put out one episode a month. The second episode goes up in 2 weeks. I partnered up with a store called The Music Zoo based in Roslyn, New York. You can check them out if you're into guitar stuff, themusiczoo.com. And yeah, Chop and Shred is literally just that. I review a piece of gear, give my 2 cents on it, and then I give you a quick cooking tip, something really simple like how to make really good sunny side up eggs. Next episode is how to cut cherry tomatoes lightning fast. Another episode will be the differences between different cuts of meat, you know, whether it's something for braising or whether it's something for grilling. These are all basic things that actually, you know, chefs, I think, take for granted that the general public doesn't know. Because to this day, I still have friends.
The way you did your sunny side up egg is fucking brilliant. I love it. I love the fact that, I won't give it away, but it's awesome. And I've never done mine like that before, and rest assured, that's how I'm doing it now. That's awesome. It looks great.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Yeah,
totally stealing that.
Yeah, for anyone who's listening and who's interested, go onto YouTube, type in Chef Brian Sow, Chop and Shred, or The Music Zoo, Chop and Shred. There's only one episode right now, but, you know, again, it's a monthly series, so definitely more to come soon. Next episode comes up in 2 weeks. But, you know, again, I'm just giving quick little easy cooking tips. And by the time you watch 4 or 5 episodes, you'll be able to put a whole dish together. And that's kind of the whole point, because there's a lot of poor musicians out there, but there's also a lot of poor musicians who don't know how to cook. So I think this is a great medium for them to absorb the cooking world and the music world, or vice versa.
No doubt about it, man. And I've got another project I'm working on, and I think that you should come hang with us on, because I think you'd be a lot of fun there, kicking it with us, man. It's a lot of fun. Dude, you're awesome. I could talk to you all night long. Do you realize, like, we've been on the phone here for like 90 minutes now almost? Isn't that crazy?
Holy shit. That's awesome.
I know.
I mean, I've had a blast. It went by so fast.
It's crazy, right? And listen, I want to remind everybody too, just so you know, if you happen to be in the tri-state area anywhere, you got to check this out. This Wednesday, Chef's got a really, really cool charity dinner happening at Vandal in the city this Wednesday. You can check it out at smallbitesofhope.org. It's a charity for hope for the day. A cool dinner. Some great people are going to be there. definitely check that out if you have 2 seconds, because you know, it's awesome when you have great chefs like this doing amazing things for the you know, just for the, I don't actually say for the world, is that weird, like doing great things like this for putting out, like, I believe in good vibes, and you're putting out good vibes by doing stuff like that, man. I really appreciate it, and I'm telling you, man, I'm working the schedule. You might get a phone call from me soon saying, bro, I can make it happen now, so be ready.
Hey, man, keeping positive vibes, positive attitude out there. That's what it's about. There's already enough negativity in this world. Why waste your time on negativity? I say keep it positive.
No doubt about it. Hey, man, we do a lot of roundtable shows sometimes, usually once a month. We have a couple of chefs on here and talk about topics in the business, man. I think you'd be a great guy to have on for that if you have any interest in doing it at some point.
I'd be honored, man. Thank you.
My man. You can make sure you guys follow Chef at Chef Brian Sao. That's TSAO on Instagram. He's a great guy, man. Reach out to him. Tell him what's up. Check out his show, Chop and Shred, on YouTube. You can type in Chop and Shred. That's what I did. Or you can type in his name, or you can type in the music store. There's all kinds of ways to find it, but it's definitely there. Chop and Shred is the best way to do it. Pops right up. A lot of fun. It's a really good tip there on making some over easy eggs. So definitely do that. Chef, I appreciate your time tonight tremendously. Thank you so much for spending. I know you don't have a lot of it, so thank you for giving us a few minutes this evening to chat and talk business and talk shop and break knowledge on people. That's always fun.
My pleasure, man. Thank you for having me. And, man, I'm looking forward to having another one of these conversations. This was really great. Thank you to everyone who listens. Really appreciate all of you. Thank you very much.
Awesome, man. We'll talk to you on down the road, all right?
All right. You take care, brother.
Peace, brother. There he goes. There he goes, guys. The one and only Chef Brian Sao. He's awesome. Make sure you check him out for sure. If you're around, man, that charity dinner sounds awesome at Vandal in New York City. Again, that just for that website, if you're interested, is smallbitesofhope.org. Check it out right there. Big shout out to everyone for checking the show out tonight. We really appreciate for coming on tonight and listening to us. And here, you know, this thing goes crazy sometimes. We go all over the place. So, you know, we appreciate it, man. We really do. And make sure you follow Chef, of course. And again, if you have 2 seconds, you know, go on them and give us a rating there on the iTunes. We appreciate it, man. We really do. I'm trying to type a message. Can you see? I'm trying to text Chef. Thank you. Sorry. Throw us a rating, man. I really appreciate it. It does a lot for the algorithm, and it's awesome. So, again, thank you all for listening. Thank you for checking it out on them iTunes and everything else. Of course, if you haven't followed me, follow me at Chef_Plum on them Instagrams. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, remember, oh, how come it's not playing? It's fucking up my thing. Hang on, hit play again. Fucking software. There we go. Ladies and gentlemen, please remember, food is one of the most important things that we have in life. Everything important in life revolves around food. Let's make sure we give it the time it deserves. I'll see you next week right here, Monday night. Peace.
I came to play. There's a price to pay. Time for you to get down on your knees. I pray.